Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win discussions, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as your suggestions for future programs. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of Ulu. Tonight's topic is New Ujamaa, Black Power Cooperative Economics. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm doing great, and it's good to be back with the family. I feel a little ashamed because for the last 2 months, the session that I was supposed to host, we had conflicting events, and so you and other people had to step in for me. So I'm back where I'm supposed to be, and looking forward to a very fruitful conversation this evening.
Well, we welcome you back, Baba, and we know for a certainty that if you were not there, it's probably that you were doing Ulu work somewhere else. So we can't hold that against you.
Good,
so where
good.
Would you like to begin tonight's program, Baba?
Well, I want to impress upon brothers and sisters who are in the listening audience, members and prospective members as well, the term New Ujamaa. And you're going to hear this more and more from us. And we add the punch, Black Power Cooperative Economics, to get your attention. Because a lot of times when we say Black Power, we kind of understand what we're talking about. We're talking about something that has some strength, some energy, again, some power.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to stress that New Ujamaa, as a new paradigm, really does have the power and the punch. And so, again, New Ujamaa as a new paradigm or new model for building economic and later other aspects and key elements or components of the community. Now, Ujamaa is a term that we're fairly familiar with. Not New Ujamaa, but Ujamaa. And it's
mm-hmm.
One of the Kwanzaa principles, and is celebrated worldwide. I'm informed that up to, and maybe in addition to 10 million of our people, celebrate Kwanzaa each year. And, of course, we've been celebrating it from the mid-60s onward. And so Ujamaa as a term we're familiar with, not necessarily New Ujamaa. Also, not only is it celebrated in the U.S., but globally. And, of course, there were efforts as the new African states emerged in the mid-60s, 70s, and 80s to empower themselves, particularly in Tanzania. Ujamaa was a practical tool that was used as a part of the effort to empower the nation state. And under the leadership of Julius Nyerere, there was an attempt to build Ujamaa villages in the country as a part of the development strategy or scheme. Now, in that context, Ujamaa means familyhood or families that build an economy. In the American context, we typically think of Ujamaa as simply cooperative economics, especially around Kwanzaa, the fourth principle of the Nguzo Saba and the fourth day of Kwanzaa. And it's generally mm-hmm. defined as to build and maintain our own shops, stores, and other businesses and to profit from them together. Now, I've never understood if we didn't own the businesses and shops and other enterprises together, how could we profit from them together? That's not to say that they're not of benefit. Certainly, the job creations, the products, goods, and services that were distributed in the community and the pride from that. So there is definitely a value. But I think we mm-hmm. know overall from empirical proof that entrepreneurship or Black business ownership and our support of those businesses has proven to not be enough. There's got to be something else to it. And, of course, we were very serious in the 60s and 70s with the, and maybe even later with the Buy Black campaigns. And then there were even campaigns where we boycotted certain sectors of our cities or certain industries that were in the white community or other communities. So not only did we have Buy Black campaigns, we had boycotts for other aspects of the economy that was not a part of our community or we saw as having a negative impact on our community. But the point I want to make is that we know at this point that entrepreneurship, black business ownership, and our support of those businesses, while being necessary, is not sufficient. It's not enough. And so when we point to new Ujamaa, we're not just pointing to an idea, but we're pointing to a systematic approach can, in fact, give us power in the 21st century. So think of new Ujamaa as Ujamaa updated for the 21st century, for now, and for what our needs are in the current stage. But before I get further involved in a discussion of new Ujamaa, what it is and how it operates, I want to kind of give a little background. In 2003, here in Atlanta, Georgia, a number of us participated in the creation of an institution that was central to what was happening in the Black Power, you know, conscious community here in Atlanta. And it was known and participated in from other cities as well. But the primary effort was here in Atlanta. And what we did, we created an institution called the African Community Centers for Unity and Self-Determination, again in 2003. And what we did, we used the first two principles of Kwanzaa, unity and self-determination, to actually build this process. Again, the name was the African Community Centers for Unity and then Self-Determination, the first two principles of Kwanzaa. And it was very successful and very empowering in the stages after and the years after it was first created. And we had an elected unity council. We had a annual appreciation banquet for different organizations and institutions in the community who did good work. We had a directory of businesses and institutions that we routinely supported. We had a Council of African Elders that was very, very active and impactful in the community. So we learned a lot from our experience with the African Community Centers for Unity and Self-Determination. But the main thing we learned was that if we didn't have an effective approach to gaining control of the economics of our community, all the other things that we did were good, again, and necessary, but not sufficient. And so in 2011, the African Community Center sent out an appeal for people to join in a think tank. And from mid-2011, for more than a year, every week, we had face-to-face sessions analyzing, strategizing, building documents, in conversation with law firms and everything that we needed to do, that by June of 2023, Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative was born. to be the economic entity that was missing in what we had built as the African Community Centers for Unity and Self-Determination. And so, again, from 2013 through 2020, we built ULU from the design of those founding documents, and with the aid of a fairly credible law firm here in Atlanta. But with some downturns and the effect of COVID, and we had a retreat here in Atlanta right after we were shut down because we had planned a national gathering, business meeting of ULU here in Atlanta, and we scheduled it for the Atlanta Center at ITC, a part of the Atlanta University complex. But maybe the next day before we were scheduled to start, the AU Center called us and said that because of COVID, everything was shut down. And so we weren't able to have our annual meeting, but many of the leaders were already in Atlanta. So we huddled and had a very eventful retreat. And the following year, we had a legal audit. And then in 2020, so maybe the shutdown was in 2019. But in 2020, after a legal audit, we essentially changed our structure. And I won't go into detail, but essentially at that point, what we call New Ujamaa was born, at least the basic elements and structure of it was born. So with that being a backdrop, now I want to get back to discussing Ujamaa as a new paradigm for economic empowerment for our people, or what we call Black Power Cooperative Economics, and to really get into that subject and maybe help us to visualize. I want all of us to think of a bucket, you know, a metal galvanized steel bucket with holes, gaping holes, and look at it with water or whatever liquid would be in it just coming out of those holes, gaping holes. Because that's essentially the state of Black America and all of the African worlds. Our economic bucket, whether it be our neighborhoods, our communities, our nation states, our regional organizations and institutions, they all have gaping holes. And what I mean by that is that the economic wherewithal, the value, the economic value is getting away from us in most situations. We're not able to maintain economic value, economic worth, the fruits of our labor in the area of production and distribution. We're not able to hold it in our container, being our communities or nation states, long enough for it to do what is required of it so that we could grow, so that we could prosper, so that we could protect and defend our interests as a people. So as we collectively think of this bucket, now I just reflect, I'm not sure that you remember Sister Q, but we used to have a page on our website called Three Buckets. The first bucket was a bucket with no holes. The second bucket was the bucket with a lot of holes. And the third bucket was a bucket with no holes. What we tried to get people to visualize, and, you know, this is not totally the case, But if you reflect on Tulsa, Oklahoma, what we call mm-hmm. Black Wall Street, and the other more than 100 communities of business excellence during that time, they were essentially buckets with very few holes in them. We were able to maintain the value of what it was we were producing and trade with each other and strengthen and grow those communities. And again, we all know a good part of what happened to create a situation where, you know, after attacks and other manipulations, we ended up with a bucket with holes in it. And so mm-hmm. on the website, when we talked about the three buckets, the third bucket with no holes in it is what we need to get back to, where we're going. And so as we talk about new Ujamaa, we're talking about a bucket with very little holes. Now, there's no such thing as a bucket with no holes. Every economy participates in the global economy, and there are inputs and outputs. But a healthy economy will have fewer outputs in relationship to inputs, such that it can maintain equilibrium, or if it had fewer outputs than inputs, then it would be in a growing phase. We look at the Chinese economy, and it's slowed down to some extent, but the Chinese found ways to plug up the holes in their bucket so that the value of their labor, their knowledge, their production was maintained in their bucket. And, of course, their bucket extended beyond their borders because they participated in a global economy. So if I can get us to imagine the bucket with holes in it, then I think we'll have a starting place for a discussion about new Ujamaa. And, of course, Sister Q, as always, we're going to invite questions and comments from the listeners this evening, and I look forward to that. But let's get into new Ujamaa in terms of what it is. Before I do that, let's talk about our economic bucket, even as it is with the holes in it. And it's said that anywhere between $1 and $2 trillion a year flows through the hands of those of us here in America. I'm not certain that that's true, but we certainly know it's a sum of potential resources for development that does, in fact, flow through our fingers. And let's say that, for the sake of the argument, that it is at least $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And think of us engineering a process, again, we're going to call it new Ujamaa, that allowed us to capture and redirect just 1% of the $1 trillion that flow through our fingers. Success at 1%, again, capturing and redirecting a little bit of that flow and placing it into a super fund, a community people development fund for us, and I'll talk about the fund a little later, what it's intended to do. If we were successful in capturing just 1%, 1% of $1 trillion is $10 billion a year. And let's say we were not successful at 1%, but just at a half of 1%. That's $5 trillion a year. Not $5 million, but $5 trillion. I'm sorry, but $5 billion
five
a year.
Billion.
Yeah, $5 billion. And, at a quarter percent, we're looking at $2.5 billion a year flowing to an environment where we are have control of those dollars for our collective group cooperative development. And as we are talking about New Ujima, always keep in mind that we're talking about a process that is for the group. You know, we said a little earlier that we know from experience that independent individual ownership, while it's necessary, it's good, it has its benefits, but we know it's not sufficient. So we've got to develop and perfect a group process. Now, on our website, there's a three-minute video called A Serious Question for You. And, again, it's only 3 minutes. But what we really want to do is encourage all of our members. All of our members have already seen the video. But it's out on YouTube. Capture it and send that video to everybody you know. And on a consistent basis, let's say every other month, or if you're aggressive every month, send it out again. Because there is some very important concepts, principles, and pointings in that video. The main thing that it points to are the three areas that we must now focus on and get good at developing tools, systems, and institutions to be good at these three areas in the context of New Ujima, this new economic paradigm. And again, they are mentioned in the three-minute video. The first one is aggregation, or pooling of resources, knowledge, labor, capital, mother wit, father wit, whatever resources we got, we need to pool them, aggregate them. And so that's first thing. But it's not just enough to have an appreciation for it. We must create the machinery to aggregate. Now, what do we do with the aggregated resources? We put those resources into production. And when we speak of in production, we're talking about building a network of group-owned, cooperatively-owned business enterprises, again, that we own collectively.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to aggregate to act like a bank and fund somebody's idea of how they can become a billionaire. Somebody mm-hmm. needs to fund that, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we're doing. We're aggregating to build business enterprises that we own as a collective, group-owned, cooperatively-owned business enterprises. And because we own them, when they mature and begin to produce a surplus, the surplus belongs to all of us. It belongs to the collective. And based on a distribution formula, those dollars are recirculated, and it points to the third part of what's in that video. And the third element is to share the harvest, or share the wealth. And we have a distribution formula that is an exact formula for how that's to be distributed back to the community. The vast majority of it goes back into redevelopment. Some of it rewards the workers. Some of it goes to a charity. But a good percentage of it also goes to reward brothers and sisters who have purchased shares in the whole overall enterprise. Remember that with the Universal Negro Improvement Association and Marcus Garvey's organization, there was an opportunity for people to not only participate and help build and strengthen the race, But there was also an opportunity for people to own small shares that, if the project had been successful, would have enriched their households and families and contributed to wealth building for future generations. That is very much a part of New Ujamaa. But unlike what happened with Garvey and what happened with ULU in its previous structure, we are now guided by guidelines coming from the Securities and Exchange Commission and even guidelines coming from the Internal Revenue Service that govern investment clubs. And we are artfully in a position to use well-used, regulated, time-tested practices to aggregate and build the process that we refer to as New Ujamaa. Now, in the ULU process, when we talk about, again, aggregating knowledge, labor, other assets or intangibles or tangibles, including finance capital. The important thing for us to understand, again, I want to repeat this all the time, that we're talking about something that is group-owned. And when we talked about the formula, when we talked about $1 trillion in capturing a percentage of that, I probably should have mentioned it then, but I'll mention it now. Because sometimes when we talk about us being in a position to capture billions of dollars for our development, some of our people freeze. It stymies them because sometimes we can't imagine us building institutions that manage revenue in the billions of dollars. I want to say to those of us on the line, if we're not prepared to create institutions, systems and institutions that allow us to grow large scale and to manage millions and eventually billions of dollars, then we're not going to be able to adequately benefit our people and be in a position to promote and protect the vital interests of our people. So we want to talk about large scale. And when we engage ourselves in the work that we do now, the institutions that we build now are built for the long run and for the heavy lifting that we have to do in the future. Are there any ones that have opened their lines? Or
no, Barbara, no. There are okay. No hands up at this point.
Okay. Now, when we talked about earlier the second aspect of taking our aggregated resources and building a network of group-owned, cooperatively owned enterprises, I want to go a little deeper in that because right now in the community that I live in here in Atlanta, I would say there's in excess of 50,000 black-owned businesses in Atlanta. Most of them are just on paper, and a good many of them have no employees. And then, of course, there's some of them that have a few employees, and then some of them are doing very well. And mixed in very scant situations or cooperatives, what we typically call worker-owner cooperatives or food cooperatives, producer cooperatives, real estate investment trusts, or credit unions or cooperatives. But when we talk about group ownership and cooperative ownership, we're talking about something bigger than co-ops. We're talking about business enterprises that we build and that they could have and will have hundreds, thousands, multiple thousands of owners throughout the African world. People who have invested in the success of those businesses purchase shares, and when those businesses mature and begin to return a surplus or what we would call a profit, then not only does the whole enterprise benefit, but the shareholders realize an increase in value of their shares. And so these businesses, when they mature, contribute to the, let's call it the super fund, the reservoir from which we pool our monies or aggregate our resources and then build a network of group-owned enterprises. As this process grows and develops, the majority of the revenue that goes into the development fund will come from successful business operations and not from the sale of shares. And the bigger it gets, the more revenue comes from the successful businesses. And we're talking about a closed-loop system. If we can envision a triangle or pyramid, on the left side is the aggregation, the pooling of resources. On the right side is the production, the establishment of the network of group-owned enterprises. And as those enterprises succeed and then have a harvest or a surplus or profit, then at the base of the pyramid, those are benefits that go back to the community, including back in terms of reinvestment. And if we would think about it, we want to create a process or a dynamic where this is happening over and over and over again, and it never stops. When it stops, that is the decline of a civilization. When we look at civilizations historically, they've either been overrun by warring factions. Maybe there were, you know, catastrophes that beset them, natural. But typically, they found themselves running out of steam as other economies encroached upon them, and their machinery of economic production that was in the hands of their people declined and was overrun by external or predatory forces. So what we want to be clear with the family is that when we talk about a network of group-owned enterprises, these are not co-ops. These are not businesses that you or I own, Sister Q, and we decide that we'll give a kickback. These are businesses that we actually own 100%. Now, and maybe I shouldn't say it that way, because in some cases it won't be 100%. So we're talking about three types of business arrangements. The first one are businesses that we start from scratch and build. The second one are what we call acquisitions. businesses that already exist and that for various reasons they are ripe for takeover or acquisition. And most of us who have been around for a while, we've known businesses in our community that for not so many good reasons, the owners just simply got old or tired. Mm-hmm. And their mm-hmm. children and their nieces and nephews didn't want to take the business over. And nobody else in the community was prepared to come in and take the businesses over. And some of these businesses had a positive cash flow. Some of them, right. maybe not positive cash flow, but with some changes in the structure, with some infusion of new capital could change and be modified such that they could become more productive. And then the third area are strategic partnerships. There will be times when there are already existing businesses or emerging businesses that are good for the community. They are not a contradiction to our values and ethics. And there's an opportunity for us to purchase a percentage of the equity in these companies. The companies may need to expand rather than and go to banks or for funding sources outside of the community. They would prefer to have funding sources inside of the community and fork over a percentage of equity in the company. And so for as long as those companies are successful, the partnerships, whatever percentage of equity we had in the company, that equity belongs to the collective, the same as in the other two scenarios. Now, so those are three areas that we look at developing these business enterprises. Now, strategically, New Ujamaa is coming alive here in Atlanta. We are focused on building our first, under our new structure here in Atlanta. We call them UBCs, Ulu-based communities. And we've had several sessions. We continue to do some of the preliminary work. There's still more work to be done. But the work we do here in Atlanta in building the first new Ujamaa influenced, stimulated, whatever word we can use, group, what we call a UBC, Ulu-based community here in Atlanta, we're building it again mm-hmm. as a prototype. And in the coming few months, we'll be in a position to have in hand what it will take to mass duplicate these new Ujamaa units that we call mm-hmm. Ulu-based collectives in other communities. Some of the features of the UBCs relate to a focus area on building supportive relationships among the local Ulu members. Another feature focuses on building supportive relationships between the Ulu base community or the Ulu chapter and other organizations and institutions in the community. A third aspect of focus will be and is developing ideas and business plans for new business enterprises that, if approved, going through a very rigorous, extensive process of evaluation. If those ideas were approved and funded, the business would be located here in Atlanta. Or as other cities come online, then everybody begins to focus on mapping their local community, getting to understand. And when we talk about a community, we're not talking about looking at the whole of Atlanta. We're going to focus on a small area of Atlanta. And in all probability, when that first prototype is finished, the second or third iteration of these UBCs will be here in the Atlanta metropolitan area. We have a large metropolitan area. We probably could support 6 or 7 UBCs here locally. And so the area of the developing ideas and plans for new business development. And again, those will be businesses, when we finally approve them, that will be owned by all of ULU. Yes, they will be located locally, staffed locally, produce a local benefit, but when they mature and begin to produce a surplus, a good percentage of that surplus goes back into the super fund. The fund that anticipates there being a good idea that comes out of Ghana, or a good idea that comes out of Tanzania, or a good idea that comes out of Grenada or whatever, or Jamaica. And so we want to build locally, but for the purpose of strengthening us locally, regionally, nationally, and globally as well. So I just want to say to the family, while you may think of new Ujamaa as theoretical, we're actually in the trenches building the systems that will fortify the institution, the local chapter, and doing all the things that it would take to strengthen the local community and empower it. Let me focus, if there are no calls or interventions, and I'm not sure how much time we got. But for most of us, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I was saying as much as you need. We don't have any hands up.
Okay,
and
good
enough. You know you've got another hour.
Oh,
go ahead.
We've gone over the first hour?
No, we haven't.
Oh, okay.
But you didn't close
okay.
to it. So.
Okay, okay. Well, stop me. I don't want to go 2 hours. Because what I want to do is I want to save the audio, and then I want to use it as a podcast. I don't want to send it back out. Because we've got to get serious, you know. The whole planet is so in such a volatile state. And I'm not sure if it's a good time or a bad time, but there's probably no such thing as a good time or a bad time to build for self. So we got to do it. And so we're going to be encouraging people to put our big hat on, to scrap up, you know, put on our big boy pants, our big girl pants, whatever it is. We got some work to do. But we're clear in terms of what the work is. And so I'll focus on the ULU-based community and the territory. Let's say that the first UBC here in Atlanta focuses on what is typically called the West End in Atlanta. For those of you who've been to Atlanta, you pretty much know that community. That's the community where the Shrines of the Black Madonna is located, Soul Vegetarian Restaurant, the Black Colleges are there, Reverend Abernathy's, Martin Luther King's Lieutenant, Hunter Street Baptist Church is located on that corridor. But that's the heart of what historically we've called the conscious black community in Atlanta. But, of course, you've got a very active community on the east side, the Decatur, Lithonia area as well. And so we look forward to expanding. But let's go back and let's focus on the West End in Atlanta. And let's envision the local UBC doing the work that it needs to do in mapping that community, drawing the boundaries of that community, and then doing the work to understand the assets in that community, the businesses, the organizations, the institutions, and maybe even chronicling, you know, some of the negative aspects of that community. But more importantly, understanding the assets in that community. And so what we do as ULU is infuse ULU with the value system of Nguzo Saba and Ma'at, but specifically infuse these group-owned, cooperatively owned businesses that we own as a collective. But these businesses are not in isolation of the already existing businesses and the already existing organizations and institutions in the community. Now, as most of us know, in ULU, a church can be a member, a sorority can be a member, or an existing business can be a member. As long as it's a legal entity, it can have membership in ULU. So let's look at that smaller geographic area that we can wrap our minds around. We can drive from one end of it to the other end of it in an hour or so, or less, maybe even half an hour. And so it's relatively small. And so we want to think of that as a community that we must liberate. We have a slogan, Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People. Let's say that in time, we've incubated, put in operation 4, 5, 6, or 7, or 10 ULU or New Ujamaa business enterprises in that zone, in that area. And all of them are in transactional relationships with other businesses and institutions. In other words, we have enhanced the quality of unity in that community. And because we're talking about a prototype, then we have reproduced what we are painting a picture of now in other communities, and maybe even in other communities in other countries. And so now the combined energy, resources, spirit, prayers, whatever we can point to as an asset, we not only use to focus on liberating this small community, but also liberating other communities. But in time, what happens is that this community, and we initially called it the West End in Atlanta, probably what we will probably do in the initial stages is rebrand it and maybe call it Kilimanjaro/West End. Much the way that we've done, there's a park in the West End in Atlanta, and those of you, or many of you already know it. If you look on the map, it's called West End Park. But many of us in Atlanta don't know it as West End Park. We know it as Malcolm X Park. So we rebranded it. So let's look at rebranding the whole area. And in time, we know it as what we branded it as. But not only that, people who fly into Atlanta from England, from France, from South Africa, from Jamaica, from whatever, when they come to Atlanta, they look forward to going to Kilimanjaro/West End, a community that's had a facelift, had a heart lift, had a spiritual lift, But in practical terms, based on our model, it had found a way to bring in more revenue than it allowed to escape. And that was progressively more and more. Obviously, it'll take a while till you get to where it's appreciably, the outflow is appreciably less than the inflow. I may say that wrong. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you don't get to grow a community if you have greater outflow than you have inflow. You got to find a way to dam it up. So in closing, I'll just say that for the brothers and sisters who are listening to us, again, visualize a bucket with holes in it. Visualize that as your local community. And you know that what I'm saying is true, is that there are holes in our bucket. The value, the resources, the hopes and dreams of our communities, for the most part, are flowing out. And with the Ujamaa, the science, the technology, the infrastructure that we talk about, we can then incrementally close up some of those holes, close up more as we grow, close up more as we grow. And through our combined efforts of aggregation, production through our group-owned enterprises, and then sharing the wealth. In other words, when our businesses began to mature and to create a surplus, that surplus does not belong to Sister Q. It does not belong to Hekima. It does not belong to any one of us. It belongs to a lot of us. It belongs to all of us. It belongs to, in a special way, our brothers and sisters who own shares in what it is that we're doing. But collectively, it belongs to all of us. And all of us have an impact and a say-so in what happens. So, Sister Q, I won't burden us anymore. I think we're right at the end of our time. And what I'll just say that is that we're going to save this, and we're going to share it, and we're going to chop it up. But I guess the challenge I have for brothers and sisters, a lot of times we don't want to think big. We're not going to get free. We're not going to get free by ma and pa thinking. If we're talking about African liberation, if we're talking about black power, self-determination, then not only do we have to think big, but we have to build for bigness, build for large scale. So as we are building the Ulu chapter, the UBC here in Atlanta, and formatting that for duplication, those of us involved in that work, most of us in Atlanta, a few of us are in other places, and you're looking over our shoulder and helping us to do the work. It's necessary that we really do have a spirit of whatever it takes, by any means necessary, that we build this prototype for a future where we manage a large-scale business, social, cultural process. It's often said that when you look at a skyscraper being built, the taller the skyscraper, the deeper the foundation has to be. And someone said to me a couple of days ago, they've never known that people who built a skyscraper or any structure started from the steeple and then built down. Mm-hmm. You build from the base up. So what we're doing now is building the base for new Ujamaa, 21st century Ujamaa, black power cooperative economics, and it's something that we cannot afford to be afraid of. We've got to roll up our sleeves, put on our vests, and go to work in building this first prototype. And then in a few months, we'll be able to introduce it and share it. And hopefully we'll be able to even dispatch a staff person to come to your city, your location, and help you install the prototype. And think of, what I want to do is get everybody to think of 100 chapters first scattered throughout the U.S. and 1,000 group-owned businesses that will spawn, an average of 10 businesses per city. Mm-hmm. And then multiple thousands of ULU members and ULU families participating in the process. And think of this occurring over the next 3 to 5 years. We can do it. We must do it. There is no excuse for not doing it. And so I know I speak for you, Sister Q, and I certainly speak for myself and, you know, other comrades. This really is a labor of love, and it's actually something we can do because now we know how to plug up many of those holes, and you do it with group ownership. Group ownership for group power. We're not going to benefit from having 1,000 Oprah Winfreys or 1,000, what's the Smith brother's name? I forget his name, who's supposed to be the richest black man in America, or richest black person, or Tyler Perry. We're going to benefit from that, but that's not going to get us over. We're going to get over when we develop a group-owned process for the benefit of our group. So Black Power, Cooperative Economics, New Ujima, and thanks, Sister Q, for the opportunity to share.
Thank you, Baba Hakima, for giving us a vision to hold so that we can... If we can see it in our minds, we can, you know, be more focused on it and bring that energy together and create it. Help you create it. We can all create it in the physical, but we have to be able to see the vision first.
Exactly.
So, and we have a very, you have laid out a very clear vision. So we want to thank you for that. And we want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. We would like to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
heart don't take too much. My mom may have, Papa may have, but God.